Like many others, our churches, pastors, and members are concerned about the dire need for disaster recovery aid for Puerto Rico as the island struggles to overcome devastation from Hurricane Maria. United Methodist churches all across the Eastern Pennsylvania Conference will receive a special love offering in September to help the people of Puerto Rico restore their homes, churches, businesses, and communities. We urge our congregations and any others that want to join us to celebrate National Hispanic Latino Heritage Month, which begins on September the 15th, by receiving love offerings on September the 16th, 23rd, or 30th for our Helping Puerto Rico Rise Again campaign. Let us help our brothers and sisters rise from their ruins and rebuild their island. It will take many years for them and much support from us. Please join us. For information, contact communications at epaumc.org. That's communications at epaumc.org. Thank you.
The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
From Philadelphia, this is Faith to Faith with Pastor Mark, a fresh and affirming perspective on today's religious issues. We're recording our program for August 12th, this coming Sunday, and our guest today is Reverend William Brawner. Reverend William Brawner is the pastor at Haven Peniel United Methodist Church. He has been very, very active in urban ministry, and he is the executive director or director of the Urban Commission?
I am the coordinator.
Okay. Well, you're the head guy at the Urban Commission, which is an extremely important commission of the Eastern Pennsylvania Annual Conference of the United Methodist Church. Reverend Will has been, I think it's fair to say that Reverend Will has had a meteoric rise here in Philadelphia. He's made his mark in Philadelphia in just his first few years of ministry. And we wanted to capture some of that energy that Reverend Will brings to his own church, Haven Peniel United Methodist Church. Haven Peniel or Haven Peniel?
Peniel.
Haven Peniel United Methodist Church. I preached there last week, and I still don't remember the name. Actually, Haven Peniel United Methodist Church up on 21st and Oxford is a fantastic United Methodist Church. It's a great community. And just to go preach there last week, I have to say it was one of the honors of my first year in ministry, because rarely do you see a congregation like Haven Peniel where there's so much love, so much care for the community, so much outreach. And I have to say a lot of that is attributable to Reverend William Brawner, who we will talk about his bio shortly. But Reverend Will has been active in not only United Methodist ministry in Philadelphia, but also social justice issues. A lot, and we'll talk about that shortly, some of the social justice issues that Reverend Will is tackling. And Reverend William Brawner has gotten a very high profile here, and I think his story deserves to be told, and his mission and his projects deserve to be advertised and broadcast to a larger community. So welcome, Reverend William Brawner.
Thank you for having me, sir. It's a pleasure.
It's great to see you. So, Reverend Will, can you just tell us your background from, let's say, a college? I understand you went to Howard University, and so if you could just tell us your background, your story, right up until your call story.
Whew. So my call story, I always question my call story, because the time that I felt like I received the call is different from the time I answered the call.
Oh, okay, let's go into that.
I always have loved the Lord. I've always have had a very close walk with the Lord. I'm HIV positive, and I have been HIV positive now for 37 years.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah. So in that walk and in this journey, it could be lonely. You know, it could be very taxing, and oftentimes the only person that I found that I could talk to was Jesus. And because of that, at a very, very, very young age, I developed a close spiritual walk with our Lord and Savior. And I have been told at a younger age that, oh, I can't wait till you start preaching. And I've had friends tell me that, you know, preachers, I have a preacher's voice. I mean, all types of different types of affirmation as it relates to preaching.
Mm-hmm.
But I never felt worthy.
Mm-hmm.
I never felt worthy. And the truth be told, I still don't feel worthy to preach the gospel of Christ to the people of God. But went along my life being HIV positive, went to college, you know, at Howard University in Washington, D.C.
And what did you study at Howard?
I was a sociology major, business minor.
Mm-hmm.
The goal was to develop enough skill to start my own nonprofit,
right.
Which we did. Haven Youth Center is a nonprofit that's at 6934 Woodland Avenue, and it is a nonprofit organization where we serve HIV-infected and HIV-infected and affected individuals between the ages of 15 to 24. We also do HIV testing in many of our United Methodist churches and throughout the city of Philadelphia, community health fairs, community organizations, recreation centers, events, and so forth. So that organization has now been in existence for 12 years.
Wow. Yeah, actually, I saw their table. I was working at the Transgender Health Fair at the Pennsylvania Convention Center last week, and yeah, it sounds like Haven Youth Center is just a great organization. What years were you the executive director over there?
I still am.
Oh, excellent.
I still am. We started our first day of business was January 7th, 2006.
Wow.
And we have been in business ever since. We started in North Philadelphia, and then we moved to Southwest Philadelphia because we realized Southwest Philadelphia is a very underserved population of people. We are the only AIDS service organization located in Southwest Philadelphia. There's a number of other ASOs that, you know, are downtown or in other areas of the city and then mm-hmm. come into Southwest. But we are in the belly of the beast, which, mm-hmm. which is where I always like to be, which is also where my church is.
So Southwest Philly, you're talking Point Breeze.
I'm talking 6934 Woodland Avenue.
Okay. That's down there.
Yeah. That's right in the middle of everything. Mm-hmm. Right across the street from the shelter, right down the street from a major drug trafficking area, around the corner from a major prostitution ring. We are the organization in the center of that.
Oh, wow. Now, does Haven Youth Center have any affiliation with Haven Pinal United Methodist Church, officially or unofficially?
Officially, of course we do. As mm-hmm. the pastor there, I'm going to bridge the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, Haven Youth Center does HIV testing at Haven Pinal.
Mm-hmm.
We also offer other counseling services for some of our members who are HIV positive, who have come forward and disclosed publicly in front of the congregation after years of silence. So we're seeing great success with that. That's one of our ministries that is budding, and we're trying to cultivate as we move forward. But Haven Youth Center provides HIV testing. We provide HIV counseling. We provide free toiletries for many of our people who come into our soup kitchen. And as I said, we also provide the counseling for those who are HIV infected and affected throughout the congregation.
So how many meals are you serving each week for the food kitchen?
At Haven, so the soup kitchen is at Haven Pinal.
Okay.
And we average about 85 a week.
Mm-hmm.
Some days
mm-hmm.
we have more, some days we have less. You know, a lot of that is dependent upon the time of the month. You mm-hmm. know, at the beginning of the month, people tend to have more money. At the end of the month, people tend to have less money. So depending on when, you know, the soup kitchen is, we may see anywhere from 60 to 120. We just are prepared to do whatever God calls us to do in those moments.
Wow, that's God's work working right through you there, Reverend Will. Now, let's talk about Haven Pinal. And I have to say, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised at how much love there was for you over at Haven when I preached there last week. It was Pastor Will this, Pastor Will that, and it was just really quite awesome that you're really quite the hero over there. How was it that you got appointed to Haven Pinal?
I don't know, brother. I don't know. I was I was the associate pastor at Tilling Temple. I was very comfortable there.
Mm-hmm.
I was cool. I had planned on being there.
So you were working for Pastor Johnson there, or
I was working with Pastor Johnson, mm-hmm. yes. And we had a great partnership. I pretty much oversaw what we know as the Impact Ministries, where we focus on a contemporary service from about 12:30 to 2 o'clock each and every Sunday. We were seeing major success. We had about I had only been doing that for about 6, 8, 7, 8 months,
mm-hmm.
But we were seeing major success. Young people coming to the church, young families coming to church. And then an opportunity opened at Haven because the pastor who was there got ill.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess our district superintendent at the time, Dr. Powell, she had been at our impact service, and I had met with her a number of times, and I had expressed an interest in being a pastor. I didn't know what was going to happen then.
Right, right.
But I expressed an interest, and then when opportunity came, she called me. And at first, I was reluctant because I didn't feel prepared.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, you know, there was so much more I needed to learn. But she told me she believed in me, and she heard clearly from God that this was the place that I was supposed to be. And I trusted her, and I trusted God, and we moved forward. And on December 14th, 2016, that was my first day of work
mm-hmm.
as pastor.
Well, I've got to give a shout out to Reverend Dr. Anita Powell. She was my DS at the time when I was up at Paoli, and she was very instrumental in getting me appointed to Historic St. George's, which for me, Historic St. George's was a perfect marriage of my interest in United Methodist history and my interest in doing urban ministry. But let's get into it about Haven Peniel. Tell me about some of the programs that you're doing there. I mean, I got to tell you, you know, it was when people were talking about how the boxing ministry starts today. I'm like, boxing ministry? What's
that's right.
that going on? So tell me about the programming over at Haven Peniel.
So first, I love the Lord, and I'm just so thankful to be here. But I love pastoring that church.
Mm-hmm. It shows. It really does.
I love the people of the church. I love the people in the community. I love the location. I just love being there. And the fact that the program that I started 12 years ago, a Haven Youth Center, and Haven Peniel have the same first name is no coincidence. That's mm-hmm. nothing but a testimony for how God moves. So I'll start there. So when I came there, there were ministries already happening. I can't take credit for a lot of this because, one, the credit is not mine to take. But they were doing things before I came.
Mm-hmm.
They had the soup kitchen that was thriving.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a number of other things that they were doing. So a lot of the things that I wanted to do were completely out of the box.
Right.
You know, I'm an out of the box thinker. I'm an out of the box Christian. And it wasn't received very well at first because it was just so far reaching.
Right, right, right.
But I had to prove credibility with my people first, and I understood that. So, I mean, the first couple months of ministry, I didn't do much but figure out who was and what is what. But after some time, I started to notice, you know, different holes, not only in the congregation, but in the community.
Right.
And as we began to, you know, do the walking and the talking and the conversing with the people in the community at the businesses and in the neighborhood, we asked them what they wanted. So it really wasn't about, you know, I had all these ideas and I wanted to implement them there. I'm a firm believer in the community already knows what it needs. You don't mm-hmm. need to tell the community what it
mm-hmm.
needs. If you ask them, they will tell you. And then when they tell you, it's up to you to see if you can figure it out or not. They told us.
Mm-hmm.
They told us that they needed programs for children. They told it they needed a safe space to have different types of information sessions, and rallies and to discuss things that were happening politically and in the community. They told us that they needed a safe space for them to just use a facility maybe for some computer program or something like that. They told us that their children needed somewhere to go that was safe and that wasn't, you know, where they weren't ducking gunshots each and every second. These are not things that William Brauner came up with. These are the things that the people in the community and the congregation said to me.
Right, right.
So then from what they gave us, we then decided to start a few things. The newest ministries at Haven Panao, we have a second Saturday ministry, which we started about a year ago, where every second Saturday of the month we have the community come into the church and just hang out and fellowship and eat and chill.
That's
every
great.
Second Saturday of the month. We haven't done it in the summer because summer is just a little bit different. But the second Saturday of the month, and from there, you know, we talked to more people in the community. We started seeing more families come in. It just really blew up.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't even prepared for it. We're still trying to keep track of the blow up.
Right.
You know, we're still
right.
trying to, you know, be a good steward of this blessing here. So, we started with that. And then, you know, people started coming in, and then they started talking to us. And then as I started being more comfortable with being the pastor, and being more comfortable in the conference, which is a larger part of pastoring, you know, I think a lot of times that we as local pastors forget of the larger part of conferencing, which is very, very important.
Absolutely.
And I feel like, you know, it's difficult to navigate, you know,
mm-hmm.
conference-wide and locally, but once I, you know, I got some footing in that, I started to find that the resources that the conference had, which is camping, you know, camping is a major resource that the conference as a United Methodist offers to our children for free.
Right, right. And in many ways, the camping ministries have been underused historically.
I am on a camping board, and we could send kids to camp.
Mm-hmm.
Where you could send us 100 kids, we could send them all.
Mm-hmm.
So once I realized that, and I'm coming from a nonprofit where I had to fight for every dollar, and then you tell me that there's all these funds available and all this access to resource that we can get inner city kids to go to camp for free, I'm going to use it. So last year we sent 20 kids to camp for free. This year we sent 15 kids to camp for free. But once we started that second Saturday ministry and our camping ministry, that was the beginning.
Oh, fantastic.
That was the beginning. And then from that, more and more people started to come in, and then we started working with some of the local politicians, and I'm really not a fan of all the local politicians, but I am a fan of a few,
mm-hmm.
And we started working with them, and they partnered with us, and they gave us some computers, so we were able to open our computer lab, where we have computer programming every Sunday after service for people just to get basic computer skills. My mom actually runs that ministry. And then we realized that we not only wanted to serve those who were hungry inside a church, but we wanted to serve those who were hungry outside of church. So we started
right.
a feeding ministry outside the church. So sometimes, so about once a month, we go outside the church and feed people.
Do you have a food truck to do that?
We don't have a food truck to do that as of yet. We are working on getting something together now. I have a few members who have started their own business, but that's theirs.
Well, I'm going to pray for that food truck for you guys.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have to say, what's most impressive about your mission and the mission of your congregation at Haven Panao is that it's a church without walls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are a church, you are a community church that just reaches out into the community, and it is so impressive. And I have to say, before we take our break, and we'll get to this in the next segment, what was really very, very impressive to me is the outreach to the young men in your community. And I know this boxing mission is really important to you guys. And when I was preaching in Haven Panao, I was blessed to preach there. We had an altar call, and there were some young men who came forward who really wanted to know more about God. They really wanted to learn how to love Jesus. And I think that's a testament to what you're doing in the community. It's looking like we are going into our first break, and as we go into our first break, I'd like to remind our audience that we are on Faith to Faith with Pastor Mark, a progressive and affirming perspective on today's religious issues. Historic St. George's United Methodist Church, a progressive and affirming Christian church, and a Philadelphia treasure for nearly 250 years. We are located at 235 North 4th Street in Old City, Philadelphia, and our Sunday worship service begins at 10 a.m. on Sunday mornings. Come join Pastor Mark Salvation and the congregation at Historic St. George's as we fight for social justice, as we address food insecurity in Philadelphia, and as we restore our bodies and minds through yoga practice. But most of all, come join Pastor Mark Salvation and the congregation at Historic St. George's as we live out Jesus' message of love and inclusion for all. Visit us online at www.historicstgeorges.org.
Introducing the YMCA. What, you already know the why? Or so you think. Sure, you know the why for a swim, a workout, even a game of hoops. But did you know we're more than that? We're a cause. When you take your jump shot at the why, someone else is getting job training. Take a cardio class while kids are in an after-school enrichment program. Practice your downward-facing dog as a teen practices her leadership skills. That's the why. We work with people no matter their age, income, or background, and give them the opportunity to learn, grow, and thrive, all with one simple goal in mind, to strengthen our community. And we've got so much more that does just that. So while you might think of the Y as that place for lifting weights, we're also about lifting entire communities. Introducing the Y. We're so much more than a place. We're a cause. Visit YMCA.net/more.
We're back on Faith to Faith with Pastor Mark. We're broadcasting from the studios of WWDB 860 AM Talk Radio in Philadelphia. And our guest today is Reverend William Brawner, who is both the pastor at Haven Pinal United Methodist Church on 21st and Oxford in North Philly, but he's also the executive director, I'll say the director or the coordinator, of the Urban Commission with the Eastern Pennsylvania Annual Conference. And for those of you who may not know, the Eastern Pennsylvania Annual Conference is the regional conference. There are three in Pennsylvania. It's the one that's on the eastern state, part of the state. And the Eastern Pennsylvania Annual Conference runs from Bethlehem in the east to Harrisburg in the west, and from Scranton in the north to Philadelphia in the south. So that's our region. And Reverend William Brawner has responsibility for all of the urban areas, the urban centers in the Eastern Pennsylvania Annual Conference. And I guess once we're, now that we're talking about that, let's go into the Urban Commission, what you're doing with the Urban Commission outside of Philadelphia, inside of Philadelphia, and then let's segue into the Urban Ministry Fund. So, Reverend William Brawner, can you tell us about the Urban Commission?
Well, so my official position is Urban Ministry Coordinator with the conference. So I partner with the commission to talk about urban ministry throughout the conference. I've only been in the position for 8 months, so we're still working that partnership through. And in fact, the Urban Commission is experiencing some transition. We actually have new leadership now. That is actually officially having our first meeting on in September sometime. So we've been conferencing and talking with a number of people who are on the commission, and just seeing what our next steps are and figuring out how we're going to move forward. But some of the things that we've been able to accomplish with partnerships through the commission and with the conference is creating something that we now know as urban alliances. And urban alliances are where we work with churches in partnership with one another as opposed to separate from one another. Meaning, if we look at Lancaster, which is an area that often feels like they're ignored when it comes to urban ministry. You know,
right.
When you hear the word urban ministry, you think of a certain place with a certain demographic. You know, Lancaster typically doesn't come to mind, but they have a thriving urban population that just gets ignored.
Lancaster's a big city, and it's not just, you know, people think Pennsylvania Dutch, people think, you know, go to Lidditz and get some pies, but Lancaster's a big city, and it's got big city issues.
It really does. And honestly, being from Philadelphia myself, the only time I went to Lancaster was to go to Sight and Sound.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of Sight and Sound, and the buffet, of course. I never really done anything in Lancaster, but to go out there and to talk to the congregations and again to talk to the people and to feel what the needs were and to get a way for everyone to work on the same platform. See, one of the issues that I believe that we have with churches, and not just United Methodist churches and not just urban churches, is that we don't work together.
Mm-hmm.
And we could be right down the street from each other and serving pretty much the same population, but we will never knock on a door. We will never partner with each other on a project. And that's a problem.
Right.
Because the people need us to partner, because that's the most effective way to reach the people of God. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. But we went to Lancaster and we heard from the people in the congregation and we heard from some of the leadership, and then we found that the biggest issue, the common denominator between all of the churches, was housing.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to come together, and the Lancaster Urban Alliance, has seven churches that have come together and decide to work to combat the issue of housing.
Right, right.
So right now they're in the process of refurbishing, revitalizing a condemned house.
Right.
They're partnering with a project known as the Mission Project that is doing excellent work, that has already been doing this work. We partnered with them. They got the house for us to work in. We have about a dozen people who go in there every week from different United Methodist churches to work on this particular house.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that particular house is done, once that particular house is done, there will be someone who will be living in an affordable house in Lancaster, PA, which they probably could not have afforded without the work of that Urban Alliance.
Yeah, I have to say, last time I was out in Lancaster visiting Pastor Joe DiPaolo at Lancaster First, he was very proud of the work that the Urban Commission has done in Lancaster, and he was really giving you props for your leadership and your coordination out there in Lancaster.
Yeah, it's Lancaster is very far from me.
Yeah.
So it is a partnership. I have to thank my wife, because when I go out there, I try to get everything done at one time. You know, I can't go back and forth for meetings, and sometimes Skype and Zoom doesn't work. So when I go out there, I have to spend a night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's taxing on the family. So I thank Reverend DiPaolo, and I thank the people of Impact and the people of the Lancaster Urban Connection and Urban Alliance. But again, it really, they do the work.
Mm-hmm.
The people, the congregations, I mean, I went there, talked to them, found the common denominator, bridged a gap or two that they had already been working together anyway, and just coordinated, you know, a meeting with two people, with Impact and the Urban Alliance. And I haven't been there in 2 months. And the work is still going on. So that's them, you know.
I have to tell you, I saw that house about 6 weeks ago, and it's looking really good.
I heard.
Whoever moves in there is really going to be blessed.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you about another success story from the Urban Commission, and it's about Midtown Parish.
Yeah.
What's the work that you did with Midtown Parish? Now, Midtown Parish, for my radio audience out there, you know, a lot of people hear Midtown Parish think of this strong, urban, United Methodist Church, but it had fallen on hard times, and I think part of the success story is when the Urban Commission came in there. So can you tell us that story?
Well, the pastor of Midtown Parish is my good friend, Reverend Eric Carr.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been an excellent leader in their time of transition. And most of what has happened with them has happened before my time. And I partner alongside with Eric, but Eric has really led this, Reverend Carr, my fault, brother, Reverend Carr. But he has really led this charge, to inform not only the commission, but the conference of the needs of Midtown Parish and how Midtown Parish needs to go forward. And truth be told, Midtown Parish has a new building, that they are soon to move into,
mm-hmm.
Under the direction and leadership of Reverend Eric Carr. So we are all in partnership and in prayer with him and the congregation, whatever they need. We all came together for camp. We went to both of our camps together. We went to Camp Inaba and we went to Camp Carson Simpson together, and they had a large number of kids partner. We had a large number of kids come together for camp. So that's our partnership with Midtown. But everything that had to do with the funding and everything that had to do with the conferencing really happened before my time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just there to come alongside and support my brother in ministry and his leadership.
But I think it's fair to give props to the Urban Commission for the financial support that they gave to Midtown Parish. Let's get back into Philadelphia, Pastor Will, and let's talk about some of the social justice issues that are at the front of your mind. When you go out at Haven Pinal, and as I said before, it's a church without walls, when you go out into the North Philly neighborhoods, what's on your mind in terms of social justice issues that need to be addressed?
Where do we start?
We're talking Philadelphia here, so this is something that's really important.
Yeah, we're talking Philadelphia, and more specifically, we're talking about North Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot that needs to happen there. One of the major issues that we fight and continue to fight and will fight until it is done is Temple's proposal to build a stadium in the middle of North Philadelphia,
right.
Which is absolutely ridiculous. But they propose to build a 35-seater stadium in the middle of North Philadelphia and rearrange and change traffic so people can get to a stadium. That makes no sense because the people in the community have said they already don't want it, and the people of Temple have not talked to the community, and as a result, they're trying to shove this down the people's throat. So now we have a fight on our hands, and we will fight until it's done.
Right.
So that's one of the issues at the stadium. No stadium, no deal. We also are working with this anti-violence movement right now. If you go to the church, you'll see we have a large number of shirts that represent each and every person that has lost their lives to gun violence in the city of Philadelphia. The problem is we don't have enough space to represent all those who lost their lives. That's
right.
A major issue. So
right.
on next Saturday, August 18th, we're actually having a community block party to address the issue of gun violence and trying to have peace on the street and trying to come together to resolve some of these issues and talk some of these things out. So violence is a major issue. The stadium is a major issue. Education is a major issue. Gentrification is a major issue. The stop and goes, which are establishments that sell open containers of liquor to people and allow people to be intoxicated around their establishments and are a nuisance to the rest of the community. One is right down the street from my church, another is down the block from my church, another is around the corner from my church. So we have three stop and goes in our community where people are just walking around drunk as zombies, not knowing anything, not knowing where they're going, but they're drunk from these establishments. And then, on top of that, we have no supermarkets. So we have three stop and goes, which is a problem. Then we have no supermarkets within a mile radius of us, which is a problem, which then makes us a food desert. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Food insecurity in Philadelphia is an issue that I've preached on several times at Historic St. George's. And for those out there who aren't aware, a food desert is where, this is defined by the FDA, but a food desert is a place where you cannot get fresh fruits, vegetables, nutritious food within a half mile. And in Philadelphia, particularly in North Philadelphia, there are no supermarkets. There are very few supermarkets. The supermarkets are a mile, 2 miles, 3 miles away from people. And people are forced to go to these stop and goes, which, you know, predominantly sell cigarettes, alcohol. They're not selling fresh fruits and vegetables.
Everything but fresh fruits and vegetables.
Well, let me ask you this, Pastor Bronner. You know, someone might look at, the Temple Stadium issue and say, look, there's this man of God out there who's advocating in the city against this Temple Stadium. How is your advocacy against Temple Stadium a Jesus issue?
It's a Jesus issue because Jesus fought for the people.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus fought against the establishments. Jesus fought against the powers that be. Most of the arguments that you see Jesus having are with those who are in power. So these are the people who are in power, and the people who are being outrun or overtaken by these establishments of power are the people in the community, and the people in the community have spoken. So we fight the Jesus fight, which is for the people in the community. This is directly tied to ministry. I don't think anyone can debate if the people in the community say they don't want something in a neighborhood, then they shouldn't have it in their neighborhood.
Right. Right. Now what are some of the social ills that could be brought into your neighborhood if they do build the stadium?
One of the major problems is gentrification. And for those who don't know what gentrification is when the property taxes of a certain neighborhood go up. The people who are currently in those neighborhoods can no longer afford to be in those neighborhoods, and they are forced out. Then the houses are sold for more, and then you have a new group of people who never look like the former group of people in those neighborhoods. So if Temple is to move forward with those plans, we will have a major, major, major gentrification issue throughout North Philly. Not only that, but there's issues with trash. There's issues with noise, and not only that, there is a disabled nursing facility directly across the street from where Temple has declared that they want to have this stadium. So what that means is if there's an ambulance that needs to get through during a game, if there's any type of situation where there's an emergency, those situations and problems may be ignored or delayed because of the amount and flow of traffic that will be happening right across the street from a nursing facility.
Right. Ooh, right. Absolutely. So let me ask you this, and this will be my last question on the Temple controversy, but we've got a platform here, and it sounds as if Temple has not been responsive to the community. If you had a platform, Pastor Will, what would you say directly to Temple about the stadium?
Well, I've said this directly to Temple. No stadium, no deal. The people do not want it. You do not have the right to tell people what they need in their communities. The mm-hmm. people have already spoken. There is no difference from the people of North Philadelphia saying they didn't want the stadium to the people in Chinatown saying they don't want a casino. You didn't give them the casino, and we're not going to take the stadium.
And I know the casino controversy down in Chinatown. The big advocate against that was Councilman David O. Are you working with him on the Temple Stadium?
We are working with a number of community organizers. We're working with fewer politicians. More politicians are getting on board because they see how strongly the community is standing together. There's an organization that I work with called the Stadium Stompers, which has been extremely vigilant and fighting this fight. I'm also a part of a coalition called the No Stadium, No Deal Coalition, mm-hmm. which is a number of community organizations that have come together. So we have a large group of people. We are organized.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that we rarely hear when it comes to social ills and political platforms, organization. We are organized, and we're ready to take this thing all the way.
Well, we know who the master organizer was the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And I have to say, you're doing Martin Luther King-like work up there in North Philly, and God bless you. Let's change topics before we hit the next break, and I want to talk to you about the African-American identity work that is really, really fantastic in Haven Penile. I mean, you just went on a trip to Egypt. Could you talk about the sort of the African-American identity work that you do, and how does that connect with your trip to Egypt?
Ooh. I'm still trying to figure that one out. Egypt was a pilgrimage. I didn't expect that. I was expecting to go on vacation.
Right.
But
right.
I came and I went and I heard and I felt and I touched and I talked, and it was transformative. So that trip partnered with my thoughts and my visions and the things that we've already done ministry-wise is still being fleshed out. But one of the things that I believe the people of God should know, especially in North Philadelphia, is Jesus not only looks like them, but came for them. And oftentimes people disassociate themselves with the way they believe Jesus to be or Jesus to look, not understanding that Jesus really came for those who were lost, cast out, oppressed, talked about, left aside. Those are the people of North Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Mary was technically a single mother, and technically she was poor, and technically she was young. And that is a lot of the mothers that we have in our congregation who have been told that they would never amount to anything because they had this child out of wedlock and at a young age. And the truth be told, if Mary was here today, she would probably be in North Philly with food stamps with a baby like Jesus. So when you tell people that and they're able to identify with that and understanding who Jesus was and who Jesus came to free and save and talk to and spend most of their time with, that's empowering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oftentimes we go in these congregations and we see a blonde-haired, blue-eyed thing, a blonde-haired, blue-eyed picture of Jesus, and we can't identify with Jesus because Jesus more looks like our oppressor than he does ourselves. And that is problematic. That's why many people, especially African-American people, disassociate with the church because there's no connection.
Right.
But there's
right.
more of a connection once we tell the people the story of Jesus and who he was and how he came to be and what he came to do.
Absolutely. Well, we're looking we're running short on time for this segment, so let me take a break a little bit early. You are listening to Faith to Faith with Pastor Mark here on WWDB 860 AM in Philadelphia.
Like many others, our churches, pastors, and members are concerned about the dire need for disaster recovery aid for Puerto Rico as the island struggles to overcome devastation from Hurricane Maria. United Methodist churches all across the Eastern Pennsylvania Conference will receive a special love offering in September to help the people of Puerto Rico restore their homes, churches, businesses, and communities. We urge our congregations and any others that want to join us to celebrate National Hispanic Latino Heritage Month, which begins on September the 15th, by receiving love offerings on September the 16th, 23rd, or 30th for our Helping Puerto Rico Rise Again campaign. Let us help our brothers and sisters rise from their ruins and rebuild their island. It will take many years for them, and much support from us. Please join us. For information, contact communications at epaumc.org. That's communications at epaumc.org. Thank you.
Everybody, let's go, let's go. Ho, ho, ho. Welcome, everyone, to West High School Spring Fling.
All right, I've gone through all the tracks. Just move through the beats. Do your thing.
All right, everyone, let's hear it for West High's own Brooke Turner, a.k.a. DJ Hook.
Scratching up my first school dance takes confidence. So getting into college, I've got what it takes. Okay, I went to the practice sessions. I slept good. I feel good.
We will now begin the test. Please take out your pencils.
I got this.
We're all good at something. Maybe it's breakdancing or skateboarding or video games. Whatever you're good at, you had the skills to make it happen. And those same skills will help us get to college. Visit knowhowtogo.org to learn what you should be doing right now to prepare for college. Start taking the steps at knowhowtogo.org.
I've got what it takes. So do you.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation, and the Ad Council.
We're back on the air with Faith to Faith with Pastor Mark. This is Pastor Mark Salvation from Historic St. George's United Methodist Church. My guest today is Reverend William Brawner, and William Brawner is the pastor at Haven Pinal United Methodist Church at 21st and Oxford in North Philly. And we've been talking about all the great missions and all of the great ministries that Pastor Brawner has brought to Haven Pinal. And we were talking about the African-American identity, really the African-American identity mission and work that Pastor Brawner is doing. And let me get to one of these great events that you've done. Back in February, you had the Black History Explosion, and that event has really resonated throughout a lot of the Philadelphia churches. I can tell you, we heard about that, and before it happened, and it just sounded like it was a fantastic event. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
It was a wonderful event. We had about 60 of our children participate. We had our mass choir sing. We had our seniors come out in support. We had a number of other churches come out and partner with us, asked us if we needed things, supported us, and then came, of course, to see the actual event. The Black History Explosion was an event where the children of Haven Pinal came together and talked about African history from before slavery until now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was broken up in segments. It was broken up in Ghana. Before the first slave ship, and then we moved into the first slave ship, and then we moved into slavery, and then we moved into abolition, and then we moved into Reconstruction, and then we moved into civil rights, and then we moved into Martin Luther King, and then we moved into Malcolm X, and then we moved into Barack Obama, and then we moved into today.
Now, that's a fantastic history lesson for the kids. Can you tell us, I mean, was that transformational for the children?
It was transformational for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first dress rehearsal that we had, and the seniors had not come. I wanted to have a dress rehearsal where everybody can come see, because I wanted the children to get a feel for what it would be like for people to watch them.
Mm-hmm.
And the choir was supposed to sing alongside of the children, through different segments of the production, and they couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were crying.
Mm, my gosh.
Because they were so moved by what they were seeing and what they were feeling. So that process, in which we engaged in, was transforming to not only the kids, because many of our children did not know that history, but many of our adults didn't either.
Right.
And
right.
For me personally, doing our research, I found things that I didn't know. So yes, that process, and that event, is something that we're going to do again in February. Same exact one. We're going to make some changes. We're going to remix a little bit. But we're going to do it again in February. The kids had a stronger sense of pride once they finished.
I tell you, my wife and I caught part of the Facebook Live broadcast of that, and we were moved just to see the earnestness and the smiles on the kids' faces. I mean, I have to tell you, that is Jesus working through you. That's Jesus working through these children. But you don't have it next February. Have it at the end of the year. Have it in the next 3 months. Have another one. Have it do it two, three times a year because it's so fantastic, that event.
Thank you. We've had a lot of requests. Churches have asked us to come do it in their churches. But it's a capacity issue for me.
Yeah.
You know, I have an associate pastor who's also very busy. And I have a lot of support, don't get me wrong, but that's a big production.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's costumes and there's AV equipment and there's music. So it's not just something that we could, you know, do as much as we would like to. But we're trying to figure out how we can do it more alongside of everything else we have going.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are so many social justice issues facing us in Philadelphia. There's, you know, criminal justice reform. There's immigration rights. There's the sanctuary movement. I mean, how do you, Pastor Bronner, pick and choose the priorities for, you know, we've all got limited bandwidth, but how do you prioritize what issues that you and your church are going to focus on?
I need to do a better job of that, honestly, because clearly we want to focus on everything. But I typically, I hear from the needs of our community first.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever they say is their issue. The stadium is not something I sought to do. The stadium is something that came through the community. Violence is not something I sought to do. Violence is something that came through the community. Stop and go, same thing. So, food ministry, same thing. So, I typically listen to the needs of the community. And if we have the capacity and the time and know who the leadership is,
mm-hmm.
because we're not leading all these movements either. You know, we're partnering
right.
with a lot of people, but a lot of people you can't partner with.
Right.
So I'm just being honest. So, you know, we decide, you know, from there and we pray on it as a community. And I have my circle of trust, one of them being Reverend Holston, another one being Reverend Johnson and Dr. Powell, people who I come to when there's a critical decision about anything with the church. And I definitely listen to their direction and guidance.
So I'd like to change gears here for a minute, and we've heard a lot about, you know, the fantastic ministry that you're doing at Haven Penile, but there's sort of an elephant in the room with every single United Methodist Church across the denomination, and that is the issue of LGBTQ inclusion in the United Methodist Church, and you know, for the benefit of our listeners, the United Methodist Church is going through a real tough time right now. Debating the issue of whether we can ordain LGBTQ Christians who are openly out, and whether we can perform same-sex weddings in our churches, whether we can rent our property to churches. And we certainly talked about this on the second episode of this show when we focused on new clergy. The LGBTQ inclusion issue, and I have to say, full disclosure, my church is a reconciling ministry network church, so we are open and affirming to the extent that we can be to the LGBTQ community, but it's something that that clergy have to be aware of. It's something that congregations have to be aware of. And let me just ask you a limited question, Pastor Will, and that is, what conversations, if any, have you had with your congregation about the coming February 2019 Special General Conference and the issues of LGBTQ inclusion?
We have had long-lasting conversations around this issue. We, as a church, there is much division. And I'm talking about a church. I'm talking about the local church, a little C. Haven Penile has had much division on this issue. There are some traditional people who believe that, you know, you should not have homosexuals, gay people in your church. There are some people who believe it doesn't matter. My position is Jesus came for all of us, and if we felt that way, we would still be in the balcony of Old St. George.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to come together and figure out exactly what it is that we want to do. This is not an issue that I, as a pastor, can say, church, this is what we're going to do, and this is what I say, because that's not the way our church works. But I am very aware of the needs and the responsibilities of pastoring those who may feel cast out and left out, and regardless of what the church in Big C says as far as being welcoming and working and supporting those, there is nobody who Haven Penile will close its doors to. We are welcoming to all races, all sexualities, all social economic groups. It does not matter. I don't see Jesus closing the door to anybody. And we won't either. As far as how we move forward and our way forward, I mean, that remains to be seen. But we are welcoming in the meantime.
One of the things that I've noticed about this issue, Pastor Will, is that it is not a black church, white church issue. Mm-hmm. It is more a generational issue in some respects. That many of the older members of the congregation, I'll say many members of my congregation who are older, let's say older than 60, have a much more traditionalist view of the Bible, have a much more traditionalist view of gender roles in society. And so, you know, I know that you've got quite a few members of that generation in your church, Pastor Will. And if someone who is 60, 65, 70 comes up to you and asks you, you know, what to do, and they come to you with this traditionalist, almost literalist understanding of the Bible, what do you say to them?
I affirm them. Mm-hmm. Honestly, it is not for me to tell people what to think and to believe. That is not the pastor's responsibility. You don't dictate the Bible to anybody. You share the Bible with everybody. And that is where I think a lot of us go wrong. So if someone comes with whatever perspective they have, even if I don't agree with it, I share my perspective and I provide whatever context, whatever content that I need to support, that claim. And then I leave the Holy Spirit to take care of the rest. But I would never tell anybody that what they think and what they believe, unless it's a completely egregious, is wrong, especially a member of the church who is still trying to form as we all, are trying to form. As far as the generational issue, most of our church, I would say about 65% of our church is under the age of 40.
Mm-hmm.
So we really have a lot of people who are more left-leaning, if you will. But I do honor and respect those who have gone before us and those who have supported us for centuries, for decades. And many of our members have been there for, you know, 30 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
So what they say matters. What our young people say matters. We have to take it all into account and be very, very careful of the decisions that we make, especially as pastors, because at the end of the day, we are still people who love and serve the Lord. How that looks is up to us.
Amen to that. Just for the benefit of our audience, Pastor Will threw out a reference to historic St. George's balcony, and just to clarify and put a little meat around that, historic St. George's, which is my church, has a long history as being the one of the first churches of the Methodist denomination in America. And back in the 1780s, the 1790s, we had a very large population of African Americans co-worshipping with us at that church. In 1792, as a result of segregation of that church by, frankly, the white patriarchy at that church, a couple of members of our church, Richard Allen and Absalom Jones and Harry Hoosier, just decided to say no. And they did a nonviolent protest in 1792, where Absalom Jones and Richard Allen worshipped in a part of the church that was reserved for whites. And they knew that they were going to be thrown out. They knew that the church was going to react negatively, and the white patriarchy at the church was going to act violently. But they did it anyway. And this was one of the nonviolent protests that preceded and certainly informed Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And once they were thrown out of the church, Richard Allen went on to form the African Methodist Episcopal Church. Absalom Jones went to form the African Episcopal Church of St. Thomas. And Harry Hoosier went on to form Mother African Zora Church, which stayed in the Methodist denomination. So just a shout out to my church, Historic St. George's, for all the racial reconciliation work that we have done over the last decades, not only to teach young people about our history of racism in the United Methodist Church, and in particular at Historic St. George's, but to teach kids about how we deal with that as a society, as a church, as people who follow Jesus. So let me, we're coming to, the time is going so fast on the show. We're coming to the end of our last segment. And, at this time, I'd like to shout out, have you, Pastor Will, shout out to the projects that you're working on, the things that are coming up at your church. What would you like to advertise, to our audience about things that are going on in your church and your ministry?
Well, the next event that we have will be August the 18th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. We're going to have a community block party outside of our church at 2301 West Oxford Street. So come on out. My daughter calls it a hot dog festival. So we're going to be giving out free food, free hamburgers, free hot dogs, free juice, free water ice. We have a DJ. We have a face painter. We have a moon bounce. We have a gospel. Our gospel choir is going to sing a song. We're going to have a few very short speeches. And we're just going to have a good time. I'm going to have a good, peaceful time on August the 18th at 2301. West Oxford Street, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Also, we have our Justice Sunday coming up, which is going to be, in January. But even before that, we're working on a Christmas explosion this year.
Awesome. Christmas explosion.
Yes. So we're working on a Christmas explosion this year. Well, it'll be something like a variety show.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have some of our choirs. We'll have some of our young people. We'll have some of our poets. We're going to have some of our, community members come out and give out some information. I mean, we're gonna try to do another explosion, but we're gonna do it around the time of Christmas. There might be a small Black Jesus story. There may be a small Jesus in the Hood story. The kids are putting it together right now, so I'm very, very excited of the energy and enthusiasm that our children and our seniors have around ministry. That's a beautiful thing for a pastor to see. In addition to that, coming in February, we will be doing our Black History explosion yet again. So we are busy. We are welcoming to any and everybody who wants to come hear the word of God. We do not care about what you have on. We do not care about what your profession is or is not. We do not care who you bring. We do not care about anything but you coming and worshiping and being and fellowshipping with us.
Fantastic. Well, our guest today has been Reverend William Bronner, pastor at Haven Pinal United Methodist Church. I misstated the location of the church earlier. It's at 2301 West Oxford Street in North Philly. You've been listening to Faith to Faith with Pastor Mark here on WWDB 860 AM. Come join us for the journey. Historic St. George's United Methodist Church, a progressive and affirming Christian church, and a Philadelphia treasure for nearly 250 years. We are located at 235 North 4th Street in Old City, Philadelphia, and our Sunday worship service begins at 10 a.m. on Sunday mornings. Come join Pastor Mark Salvation and the congregation at Historic St. George's as we fight for social justice, as we address food insecurity in Philadelphia, and as we restore our bodies and minds through yoga practice. But most of all, come join Pastor Mark Salvation and the congregation at Historic St. George's as we live out Jesus' message of love and inclusion for all. Visit us online at www.historicstgeorges.org.